Greetings to the lost, trying to be found sheep of the house of Israel. This is a revamped edition of Hour of Great Tribulation, and it's episode number, August 13th of 2011. And the title of this particular sermon shall be As in the Days of Noah. Now, I have seen over the last couple of years, you have a number of people like Eli James who go ahead and bring a little Jew taste or a little Jew attribution or a little Jew flavor to him reading these books of the Apocrypha. Eli James has no idea of what he's talking about. He's just simply a Chicago Jew tasked with infiltrating Christian identity and snitching and lying to the FBI and whoever else he can snitch and lie to. He's just a Jew. He has nothing but hatred for the true message of dual seed line Christian identity. And then there is someone who essentially is nothing more than just a senile old traitor who has let himself go from being trusted and who has prostituted himself to go ahead and bring in other Jews. A rather evil, vicious Jew from Jersey City originally named William Fink. And he has brought in mamzers like Brian Rio, nigger, lip, gook, whatever. And essentially, their idea of a proper Bible study or a proper Christian or dual seed line Christian identity service is to simply go ahead and read from the scripture and then pervert it as best they can. And around them, they have a bunch of usually mamzers who aren't white at all, not Christian identity, not Christian Israel, who will never be anything other than mamzers who hate the true message of Christian Israel, in which the law of Yahweh is not written on their heart. So I've decided, since at least people like Pete Peters in his own way knew something about Christian identity, although he said he wasn't identity for the past dozen years or so, and some other people, like Arthur Murray, who are, at least better at actually having a congregation of white people, as opposed to anonymous mamzers like Steve Elder, a.k.a. Commandor McFag, and the rest here. So what I'm going to do is on this podcast, I am going to make a dual seed line Christian message to which I will have essentially a worldwide Church of God format, to where there will be an introduction, there will immediately be some hymns, there will be an introduction to the sermon, then there will be at various portions throughout the sermon, about every 30 or so minutes, there will be a hymn. And this hymn will be from, a lot of it will be from the Worldwide Church of God, which has been put into semi-public domain. And folks, you are encouraged to go ahead and sing along to this hymn and to go ahead and read the scriptures for yourself. Now today, we are going to go ahead and cover Bertrand Comparé and his saying about what actually happened as in the days of Noah. And I agree pretty much with Bertrand Comparé. And when Bertrand Comparé and I disagree, I must say I defer to Bertrand Comparé because he knew far more than I ever can pretend to be. I am far more of a field pastor, far more of a political pastor than Bertrand Comparé. We are closer to the time of the end than we were during Bertrand Comparé's day. So, the very first hymn will be, I think it'll be the alternate the alternate theme song for this show, and it'll be from Joel chapter 2, called Blow the Horn, Let Zion Hear. And then we will have, I'm not quite sure what hymn to have after that. Pretty well, I'll go ahead and leave a link to it. It'll be, well, pretty much up to me. So anyway, I do need to go ahead and get this out. So let's just go ahead and get the ball rolling. Hail victory, folks. Blow the horn, let Zion hear, for God's day is now at hand. Let the people tremble in this day of clouds and gloominess. Troops so great and mighty strong, there has never been the like. Nothing shall escape as they devour the stubble on their way. Fire before them shall devour, flames ablaze are left behind. Such as Eden was shall become a wilderness that's desolate. Like the noise of chariots, and as horsemen do they run. Nothing shall escape as they devour the stubble on their way. People are faint at their sight, for they run like mighty men. Moving each on his own way, they do not tangle in their paths. Each to follow his own line, climbing walls like men of war. Then they charge as warriors and advance like fighters on their way. They upon the city leap, break through weapons each unharmed, run upon the walls and climb in houses, through the windows leap. Earth is quaking as they come, heaven shakes, stars cease to shine. Then the eternal thunders and the sun and moon become both black. All hail the power of Jesus' name, let angels prostrate fall. Bring forth the royal diadem and hail him, Lord God of all. Bring forth the royal diadem and hail him, Lord God of all. Ye chosen seed of Israel's race, ye who did hear the call, hail him who saved you by his grace, and hail him, Lord God of all. Hail him who saved you by his grace, and hail him, Lord God of all. Let every Aryan of every tribe on this terrestrial ball to him all majesty ascribe, and hail him, Lord God of all. To him all majesty ascribe, and hail him, Lord God of all. Oh, that with yonder sacred throng we at his feet may fall, will join the everlasting song and hail him, Lord God of all. We'll join the everlasting song and hail him, Lord God of all. Hello, sheep of Israel. In this segment, the song that I just went ahead and played was called All Hail the Power of Jesus, of Jesus' Name. It's an older hymn, and the reason I chose it is because you are the chosen seed of Israel's race. You who did hear the call. And who chose you? The answer is you did not choose Jesus Christ, but rather Jesus Christ chose you, so that having ears you would hear, and having eyes you would see, so that you would discern the truth, and that your mind would be open, and you would repent, and Jesus Christ would heal you and open your mind, and thus start you on the path to eternal life. Because you are the found sheep now of the house of Israel. And this particular sermon is to go ahead and set your mind to what you need to know. Because this is a dual seed line Christian identity orthodox sermon. Now, today's sermon is entitled, As in the Days of Noah. And back on February 19, 2011, when I was sort of busy with a number of things, and it's always a never-ending struggle to go ahead and fight against the Jews and the Mamzers and the rest of the Jukals, which go ahead and infest this particular bowel movement of ours. And folks, many people say, well, you must hate these Jukals, as I call them, these jackals. Well, I call them Jukals. And the answer is not at all, because they make my task easier as a Jeremiah 3:15 pastor. Because what they do is that they cull the diseased animals, the sick, the weak, the goats. And what they do is that they take these goats and they bring these goats, and these goats, being Satan's children or wiggers who need or want to die, go ahead and they follow these Jukals into the dunes in the wilderness of sin. And then once they are cut off, why, they are simply gone ahead and destroyed like any other weak animal. These Jukals go ahead and they pull down these weak, diseased animals. And spare me the trouble of having to club them myself in front of the herd, which might be horrified at seeing what the pastor does, because the pastor is not so much taking care of the sheep because he's in love with sheep, but rather because it's his job to make sure that the herd is healthy. And I've several times said that unlike the shepherd who will go ahead and put 99 of his flock in danger to go ahead and save an erring sheep, rather, I would just as soon make sure that at the end of the trailhead, it doesn't really matter as long as I have one or two sheep, as long as that sheep is a sheep that should survive, as opposed to a diseased animal that we started out with. But getting back to the letter, this person who I suspect, I have a high opinion of this person, and I do listen to this person. But this person said, listening to tonight's last minute Brother Elijah show that I missed, and this was pretty well the last show or next to the last show before Brian Reel went ahead and whined and bitched and took it off of TalkShoe. I had a few thoughts on your closing remarks about this great tribulation on the horizon, and it is on the horizon. It's far more than a hand-shaped cloud now. I know you don't like think, but he may have some good points. One of them being that the tribulation has basically already begun and is indeed ongoing right now. Floods and floods of muds right now, etc. There are even now very few white Israelites left, not to be confused with white-looking individuals who, in reality, are to some degree mixed. Well, this person is somewhat right here. I have a question here. How do you tell the difference between night and day? Does it go ahead in 1 minute, be day, and then the next minute, in a flash of an instant, turn into night? And the answer is no. The twilight goes ahead and it spreads. Things get darker and darker and darker. It doesn't literally 1 second be full daylight and the next minute be full dark. No, we are living in the beginning of the Great Tribulation, wherein, essentially, just as in the days of Noah, you have more and more and more miscegenation, you have more and more mongrelization. And so, as a result of doing these shows, in fact, when I started these shows a year or so ago, in February of 2010, I used to think that there were 150 million Uyghurs and 140 million Muds. But now I go ahead and I turn the television off, I look at the news, and what I see out in the great population is I see more and more so-called blonde-haired people, but they got burnt cork eyes. They got Mamzer eyes. The eyes are the first things to go. And I've revised my percentage of Israelites down, down, down all the time, and revised my percentage of Mamzers who pretend to be white, who want to be white, who want to pretend to be white, who don't know themselves, but who, in some cases, perhaps fear being what they are, and thus not liking what I have to say, who are not quite white, who are pretending to be in Christian Israel, and the rest here. And folks, how these people do behave tells you a lot. They go ahead and they let Brian Reel, they let William Fink in. And what I have to say is that these people do not belong. No white man would let in someone like Brian Reel. The only reason Brian Reel is tolerated is because Eli James and William Fink are Jews. They go ahead and they go along with the idiotic imposture that Brian Reel is somewhat white. And so, you end up having, say, Captain Senility, and he's sitting around like a senile Phoebe. And do you think he hasn't heard or understood that Bill Fink is a Jew? That Eli James is a Jew? That Brian Reel is a Mamzer and a homosexual? And the answer is yes, he sort of knows it. But he doesn't really care. Because far from being a watchman, he's a treasonous sentry, Clifton M. Heiser is. He has brought in these evil creatures among us. And now they're going ahead needing, well, not the discerning true Israelites. The discerning true Israelites seeing what they were and fled a long time ago. And I think this person who wrote me this letter fled a long time ago as well. 1 minute, this person was there, possibly with Fink, and the next minute, that person was gone. Just gone, like that. We're going on. The Word tells us that at His return, it will be as it was in the days of Noah. In the days of Noah, there was no great social upheaval, unrest, or revolution going on. What was happening was a tremendous amount of race mixing among the white Israelites in the area. Now, folks, they were not Israelites because Israel, Jacob Israel, was born, oh, at least 500-600 years after the at the time of the flood. So, being born after the flood, they were not Israelites, but they were Adamites, and I'll go ahead and take that as a misstatement. So much so that only Noah and his family were the remaining unmixed Israelites when the flood finally came. Well, We don't know that. We don't know that for a fact. The thing about it is that Noah was of the ruling or of the first family that was left. Clearly, there was no success going on. Clearly, there was no successful physical revolution or fight of whites against Babylon, Zog, Muds at the point, unless it involved direct divine intervention. So I don't really see any kind of revolution or takeover happening before the return of Yahweh. Well, this person has been indeed listening to me. Folks, the whole purpose of the movement TURD is to tell you, do not be following a great bowel movement leader, and that includes myself. Don't go ahead and think that there is a political or military solution, you're going to vote your way out of it, or you're going to revolt your way out of it. You see, as in the days of Noah, the population passed the tipping point. And one minute, you know, it was sort of like the difference between day and night. At some time, say about 400, when Noah was born, Noah was, the vast majority of these Adamites were white. But they had, like Bertrand Compere said, doubtless they did the same thing that the Israelites did with the Canaanites. They did not wipe out these Orientals who lived in that particular place in the Tarim Basin. They didn't go ahead and strictly segregate them in reservations any more than the Aryans when they invaded later, the Dravidians when they invaded India. No, they might have very well passed laws that there would be no race mixing, but these laws didn't mean anything. These laws were violated, both in the first Zog Babylon and later when the Aryans invaded India. And later on today, you see, you can go ahead and pass all the laws that you want, but you will not control people's peckers. You will not control some slut's pussy. She will go ahead and find a way. And the only thing that goes ahead and makes sure that people are white is understanding and being called and becoming Christian. And so, folks, we have gone ahead and passed, way past the point where there is going to be any revolution, there's going to be any takeover. You see, I don't have any fight with Harold Covington trying to go ahead and do it, and he's the only one I see in this movement actually doing it. The rest of these Pierceite tars was just simply, Pierce was just not, simply nothing more than Zogbot, who essentially took order money. The Creators are a bunch of Mansers following this dead Jew on a dick, Benny Klassen. And increasingly, within Christian identity, it has altogether been taken over. Above ground Christian identity is about the only white ones that are left are James Wickstrom and Mo Gullet. And essentially, Wickstrom and Mo Gullet are just nothing more than Zog snitches. Eli James, Jew, Chicago Sephardic Jew, Bill Fink, Jersey City, Ashkenazi, criminal pig Jew, Clifton Amheiser, traitor who goes ahead and lets these Mansers and Jews into the gate. Not a watchman, but rather a treasonous sentry. So, what is there to do? And the answer is there is nothing that can be done about this matter. The only thing that's going to go ahead and save the white race, Yahweh's servant people, is Jesus Christ's return upon a great tribulation. But first, this base metal, which used to have gold, which used to be silver, must be pushed into the refiner's fire and burnt up and burnt alive, and all this dross burnt out. So this person who went ahead and wrote me understood that there was no revolutionary solution. None whatsoever. Finishing up, I know think does not agree with Comperé on everything, but Comperé was also a historicist in his approach to the Bible. It is a valid view of the world, of the word, and I think it's worth considering that the same application to further portions of the word may not be entirely out of line. Something to consider anyway. Just a few thoughts. Well, folks, this historicist horseshit was nothing more than just a lie by Clifton Emmaheiser to come up to where, essentially, when I first heard this crap about how the Book of Revelation had been mistranslated to where it was, instead of being a resurrection, it was a restoration. This is nothing more than what is called papist preterism. At that time, Finkelstein and Eli or James were Jew butt buddies. And I got Eli James to go ahead and admit they agreed with Fink is that somehow the Roman Catholic Church put Satan into the pit for 1,000 years from 500 to 1500. In short, the doctrine of preterism. And what ends up happening? Well, Clifton Emmaheiser gets together and using his dwindling reputation as a historian or as a Bible scholar, he's really a Bible screwer is what he is, he went ahead and came up with a different Jesuit who believed supposedly in some of the things supposedly that the Protestants and the British Israelite people believed in. And essentially it's millennialism. Now folks, there's two different thoughts within Christianity, and we already talked about, well, I don't know if we talked about preterism. You do have preterism within Christian identity. But they're mainly idiots like V.S. Harrell, who essentially is just a lunatic, I would say. He calls me a lunatic. I mean, he is more fucked up in the head than I will ever be. He's totally screwed up in the head. He's just totally unbiblical. He's just a rather nasty person. And generally, if you end up having an argument with a preterist, I tried having an argument with a preterist back in 1998 or 1999. Another preterist showed up, for which I'm grateful, and the two preterists argued with each other about preterism. A preterist, he believes that the kingdom of God has been around since AD 70. Now I went ahead and typed up preterism, and I found out that preterism was designed by this Jesuit, or this Jesuit, who is trying to go ahead and bring into the Sibylline Church of Rome, which dates from the Hatti, which were the Hittites. Essentially what was a bunch of Jews trying to go ahead and bring about the Babylonian, Nimrodian idea of a trinity of Nimrod, Semiramis, and Neo-Nimrod. Trying to go ahead and bring about that sort of nonsense. And essentially, the Roman Catholic Church is the New Babylon. And what it tries to do is it tries to, essentially, it's a Mamzer religion. It's a religion for Mamzers. That's why Jeremy Visser's kids, I agree with their grandmother. They should become Roman Catholics because they have no business becoming Christian identity because there's no part for them as being Mamzers because this is a Mamzer. His wife is a high yellow Mamzer. Essentially, they're just high yellow Mamzers. So they ought to go ahead and become in a Mamzer-friendly church, and that means the Roman Catholic Church, not the Christian Identity Church. But what happens is that this historicist crap was altogether invented by Clifton Emmaheiser. I never heard of any historicist, and essentially, Clifton Emmaheiser just went ahead and drafted up a paper without any biblical proof and came up with, supposedly, there were two major things. Yes, the preterist came up, but oh, there was some other character who believed in the millennialism. Well, folks, the Protestant view, the Arian Israelite view, because Protestantism was a protest against the Sibylline Babylonian church. And the Protestant view has been that there will be a great tribulation, Christ will return, and when Christ returns, he puts Satan in the pit for 1,000 years. And Eli James, he knew that. He'd been infiltrating Christianity for a long time. Fink doesn't know anything about Christian identity. He's just a Jew boy who got caught murdering a prisoner in the Jersey City jail. He got 12 years, and about 10 years after he got tired of administrative segregation, he was pretending to be a Greek scholar, pretending to go from being a violent sociopathic pig criminal. Essentially, probably the Zoglings went ahead and decided, oh, we can go ahead and pretend you're an Asian provocateur. You'll end up having this traitor named Clifton M. Miser bring you in. You'll have this Jew named Eli James bring you in. And think like that. He didn't like staying in administrative segregation. He has a job. His job is to go ahead and get into Christian identity. And that's what he's done. So anyway, this historicist horseshit was altogether invented in January of this year by Clifton M. Heiser. It has no antecedent in Christian identity, either one seed line or dual seed line. You see, folks, I at least know what the British Israelite people said, because I sat for 10 years in a folding steel chair from the age of 10 to the age of around 20 or so. And once I got off to college or something like that, then it was into the army, and essentially no more Herbert's horseshit. And I did think that, when I was sitting in there, that most of it was horseshit, but it did go ahead, and it did some of this. I did listen while I was trying to snooze or trying to read other sections of the Bible that were smutty or whatever. And essentially, if it was an interesting sermon, I would go ahead and listen to it. But folks, this historicist crap that Clifton M. Heiser came up with is altogether just that crap that he made up in January in order to go ahead and kick out a successful Jew boy who had been in Christian identity, pretending for 25 years, an affable Jew boy, in return for a rather disgusting, evil, sociopathic, Ashkenazi Jew mamzer like William Fink and Brian Reel. I mean, folks, if you want to see something as disgusting, see old Captain Senility, C.A. Amheiser, going ahead and on the talk stew, listening to a shit-colored faggot mamzer like Brian Reel and Finkelschini worshipping Adolf Hitler as a god, or at least the Archangel Michael. Totally against anything that Christian identity stands for, and you hear Clifton M. Heiser not saying a single word. But when you do come up with criticism against the Roman Catholic Church about papist preterism, old M. Heiser goes ahead and he finds something to make up, and he makes up this thing about historicists. Folks, there's no such thing as historicism. It's just something that essentially has not been around, except in December of last year or January of this year. It was made up altogether by Clifton M. Heiser. You see, folks, by going ahead and claiming about historicists, folks, would you believe everything you read in a lie paper or a juice paper? And the answer is you don't. That's why people don't go ahead and buy juice papers anymore. They got tired of paying good money to be lied to. So, folks, you don't think that people lied back 3,000 years ago? 4,000 years ago? You don't think they didn't lie 5,000 years ago? Well, 5,000 years ago, the vast majority of people could not read. They lied anyway. They certainly lied to say they were Jews. Like Fink, Eli James, and Brian Real. So what makes you think that being able to go ahead and write something is going to go ahead and make them anything more than lying Jews? Just because they can go ahead and crack open the Bible and pretend that they know what they're talking about? Folks, if the word of Yahweh is written on your heart and you're believing something by a lying Jew, what is really written on your heart? What that lying Jew tells you? Or what you are supposed to understand? Because the word and the law of Yahweh is written on your heart. Well, folks, if the word and law of Yahweh is written on your heart, you got to go ahead and laugh at critters like Brian Real. Some nigger pretend to be a white man, talking about how if you have 1/1000th of non-white blood, why you are to be kicked out when old nigger lips is even a third white, if that. And having people go ahead. And then you hear Whiny Dave and Maui Patricia 2 weeks ago, going on three, kicked over the slop trough and married some Israelite with blonde hair and blue eye or green eyes, and he wasn't any good in bed, so she went ahead and divorced him. Well, why shouldn't she do that? Why should she go ahead and pretend to be under Israelite law of divorce and remarriage when she's just a mud skank looking for Aryan Packer here by penetration? Folks, why in the world should some Jew or mamzer with a Bible become anything more than just a lying Jew or mamzer? Why in the world? So, my answer to this, this well-writ thought of email, was I said, well, what needs to be understood is that this is not the first Zog Babylon, but rather the third and the final Zog Babylon, because I don't see another one coming down the road. What happens is that now we live, just like Lotham Stoddard says, is that it is pretty well burnt out, any white race. Folks, even if you go ahead and count critters who which really are not white, but which are off-white, it is said that less than 2% of the white or off-white population is child-bearing females, which means that essentially, under the current Zog Babylon, we are doomed. And the only thing that's going to save us is a great tribulation. But this isn't the first Zog Babylon. The first one, as in Noah's day, was the first Zog Babylon, was the Adamite community that lived in a basin 650 miles long by 350 miles wide. More than enough for the sons of Adam. More than enough, though, for them to go ahead and miscegenate with demons and with Orientals and anything else that came along. Yahweh destroyed Adamic Zog Babylon by flood, and this one will be destroyed by fire. And that all the Zog Babylonians have in common is the same point, that Uyghurs remain the same, that they cannot control their tongues, their minds, or their peckers, regardless of what happens, that Jews get in, and that mongrelization occurs, and that the end result is that the mighty evil empires go down into the ash heap of history. Usually, in fact, always taking their founding stock with them. Folks, how many Assyrians, how many pure-blood Assyrians do you see? How many pure-blood Persians do you see? How many pure-blooded Aryans do you see? How many pure-blooded, Greeks or Romans, really, do you see? And the answer is none. All these mighty evil empires did was, for a short time, their treasonous elites were infiltrated by Jews, and they brought in mamzers. And they destroyed the founding stock, and that's always happened. Now, Rabbi Finkelschini, being nothing more than Jersey City Jew boy, criminal, sociopathic tendencies, hence a Zog pig, knows little or nothing except in the ways of evil, as is thinks father Satan. There will be some who will survive, but it will be those who hate Zog Babylon and all it stands for, and has no pity for Uyghurs who bring evil down upon themselves, as such always do. Because letting an ordinary Uyghur run things usually means that the Uyghur will go ahead and play with the loaded shotgun of miscegenation. And as a result, he won't be a pure-blooded Uyghur. He will go ahead and have nigger grandkids or beaner grandkids or gook or little, you know, manzer grandkids. And whether or not they look blonde because of a bleach bottle doesn't really matter. They're still not blonde now. And they will not be blonde, because once those genes are mixed, it's done for. Yahweh is not going to accept a mamzer into the congregation of Israel, and anybody who goes ahead and brings them in is really nothing more than a traitor. Anyone who goes ahead and brings them in under color of religion is almost always a mamzer himself or a Uyghur with a death wish. The kike shit about being a historicist is simply something that Clifton Amheiser made up when Finkelschini was called a papist preterist, namely a preterist being someone claiming that all prophecy has been fulfilled. And if you go ahead and look, when Eli James was trying to suck up and keep his little marriage of Jew convenience with, you know, Rabbi Fink, they were even saying that the four horsemen of the apocalypse was, you know, Gaius Marius and Sulla and Julius Caesar and Cato, who lived 100 to 180 years before John of Patmos put pen to go ahead and write about the prophecy. Why would John of Patmos go ahead and write as prophecy something that had already happened 100 to 180 years before? But here's Eli James and Bill Fink agreeing with that stupid horseshit. Folks, it goes to show that Eli James don't know anything about why he's infiltrated and that Bill Fink knows even less. And here you have Clifton Amheiser listening to the stupid shit. Not saying a single thing. Not even, you know, having a stupid sheep look, you know, as to who farted. Right? So, as a papist preterist is someone who claims that all prophecy has been fulfilled. Amheiser is now despised as a whore who will suck off every Jew, mamzer, and faggot and bring them into the congregation simply because Campore was and remains the foremost teacher of the dual seed line Christian identity. There is no such thing as a historicist, given that history is written by the victors who support Zog Babylon. History is simply the lies that have survived in order to be told by Jews and shadow swigger mamzers wanting to bring about Zog Babylon. I would trust no history book any more than I trust a Jews paper or a lie paper. Rather, Rabbi Finkelschini is as much a historicist as Finkelschini is a Greek scholar. Everyone able to speak or write Greek laughs at Finkelschini's pretensions. And that's true. Finkelschini foams at the mouth about anybody able to actually read Greek or study Greek or even have a Greek concordance who essentially catches Fink out in his numerous lies. Fink is just simply a Jew boy who gets together a bunch of mamzers and they have a little Talmudic scholarship to where essentially, if you go ahead and disagree with Fink, you're going to be out on your ass. Now, looking at what happened tonight, it looks like old Victor Switzer may be back, and it looks like Visser was running first from Eliers to Finkelschini's. So you have your Mamzers and you have your Zogbots running to and fro between Elier and Finkelschini. Because Finkelschini and Eliar were going head to head. It's just simply nastiness of Jews who hate each other almost more than they hate. With the Genesis 3:15 passion, the true children of Israel. Eli James understands who is far more dangerous to him, and that's me, than Finkelstein. Finkelstein is just another fellow Jew, albeit more Hittite than he is. But going on, no white man, no true Israelite would let a Mamzer or a Jew into the congregation. Yet Clifton Almaheiser has let in a swarm of them. Eli James, Bill Fink, Brian Rio, Jeremy Visser, etc. Steve Elder, a.k.a. McFag. All these Mamzers, all these Jews pretend to be Christian identity, pretend to be a white man, when your very eyes can go ahead and tell you that they're not. And if you understood anything about Christian identity, you would understand is that, hey, these are just a bunch of Catholic Mamzers and Marino Jews and the rest pretending to be something that they're not. They went ahead and found something, and just like all Catholics, they hate Mamzer Catholics, they hate Christian identity. Because the call of the Akkadians, the call of the Hittites, tells them that essentially the Christian identity is the racial religion of the white man. And that mongrelization, and advancing mongrelization, advancing the lies that Yahweh loves the little Mongols and Mamzers of the world, the Jews. Well, that's what they go ahead and they preach, and that's what they go ahead and teach. And they have done this sort of thing ever since Cain got run off. And ever since they've been trying to go ahead and sneak back in. And even though Cain was marked, you go ahead and you look at him, and these people, he ain't a Jew. He bought me lunch. He's a Portuguese. Hitler was a Jew. Eli James is Portuguese. Okay, whatever, John Knight. Going on with it. I mean, I guess you can sort of expect that old John Knight won't go along with Sword Mamzer and Finkelstein, for which I should be grateful, because they believe that Hitler was the Archangel Michael, whereas John Knight believes that Eli James isn't a Jew, he's a Portuguese, and that Adolf Hitler was a Jew. But getting all of it, no white man, no true Israelite would let a Mamzer a Jew into the congregation, yet Clifton Almaheiser fed a swarm out. I think I already read that. Getting on with it. Likewise, it was in Noah's day. The Adamites wouldn't dispossess fully the Oriental inhabitants any more than the Israelites killed all the Canaanites. And the end result is that since they didn't dispossess them, they bred among them. And thus, as a result, the Canaanites became a thorn. And they were a thorn. They always were a thorn. They would go ahead and interbreed with white women and with white men. You'd have Estrichicuses. And as a result, you would have mongrelized Jews. Jew drones. Who would, regardless, still be following the impulses of their father, Satan the devil. Then, demons. In the case of Noah's day, demons got into the mix. And the end result? Their very mongrelization, which destroyed white empire after empire, has taken with it the founding stock with it as well. And now the time is near to end it all, with one last final collapse, with one great tribulation, then a millennium, and then a final settlement, of all accounts, a great judgment day. And that is the dual seed line Christian identity Orthodox doctrine, not something made up by Jews and Shabbos Uyghurs infiltrating traitors. Not something that is just pulled out of your ass by some jealous old Uyghur phoebe like Clifton Almaheiser, who cannot stand the fact that Bertrand Comparé will always remain the great scholar, the great teacher of dual seed line Christian identity doctrine, just like Wesley Swift was the great orator of dual seed line Christian identity doctrine. Folks, you have had these infiltrating Jews come in time after time after time and try to destroy the racial religion of the Adamites, are the Israelites. And the only thing that's going to save us now is not to where we are going to go ahead and take Mamzers and Muds. We are going to go ahead and unleash either Sauron's Ring or Sauron's Orcs against Sauron. That's not going to happen. The only thing that's going to go ahead and save the white race is a great collapse, a great tribulation. So this church holds its commission, the prophecy of Jesus Christ concerning the time soon to come, the end of Zog Babylon, the third and final. And let me go ahead and quote it. Matthew 24, 21 through 22. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. Verse 22. And except those days shall be shortened, there shall be no flesh shall be saved. But for the elect's sake, these days shall be shortened by Jesus Christ. By Jesus Christ's second coming. So folks, that tells you that preterism, be it a V.S. Harrell, or the papist preterism by these Roman Catholic Marino Jews, Finkelschini, Eli James, Brian Reel, the rest of them, it says that the salvation of Yahweh's servant nation shall not be because of a revolution, because old Bongo got voted out and Republicans got put in, because Michelle Bachbamser is going to go ahead and be a Esther Kikas Jewess or whatever the hell she is, and she's going to go ahead and lead us to doing away with Social Security and Medicaid and tax cuts for all these outsourcing corporations? No, that's not the way our salvation is going to happen. Our salvation is going to happen by essentially billions and billions of these non-whites dying, and these Jews dying, and these stupid Uyghurs dying, and leaving only a few millions left here. And they will go ahead and be reled in their survival when things break down into tribes by warlords. That's why my plan is a 10,000 warlords program, and it is achievable because simply it goes with the flow of history. There have been dark ages and collapses which have lasted 1,000 years in the case of this big dark age. But there was a 400-year collapse from 1200 to about 800, which pretty well finished off the Hittite Empire, which pretty well seen Egypt decline, and all these small little kingdoms of Israelite called Greeks here go ahead and prosper. Because essentially Yahweh's way is not a mighty evil empire like under Sargon, under Zog Babylon, but rather to where you have limited government, you have local government, and you have white people allowed to be white people and go ahead and breed more white people and teach themselves what they need in order to go ahead and survive. Yahweh's way is not of unity, but rather of decentralization, rather of every man knowing Yahweh and worshiping Yahweh and being white, not being centralized, not being under one whip, not be under Satan the devil, not be under Cain on earth, is decentralization. It is these dark ages which go ahead and have saved the white race, because if Rome had gone ahead and continued, would it not have sooner or later conquered Germany and then gone ahead and turned all these Germans, you know, just like they did with Gaul, into a sort of eunuchoid, non-white, or mixed race bunch here like happens in the Mediterranean? The answer is sure it would have. Yahweh's way is not unity. Yahweh's way is essentially for every man to be head of his own family. And I like to think that there are some people who didn't go ahead and get on the boat, you know, on the boat, but what they seen is they seen, and they believed. And rather than beg Noah for a boat ticket, what they did is that they headed out of the Tarim Basin. They headed toward Europe, and they skirted around, and they moved around Cain's or Sargon's empire. They went ahead and moved around. And what they did is they saved their lives. They saved their very lives. So going on is that Jesus Christ, in that chapter about Matthew 24, verse 21 through 22, he goes on and he says, he mentions about Noah's day. Jesus Christ says that these days and these end days, the Zogs of today, shall be running around as in the days of Noah. Because, folks, the first Zog Babylon was run very much the way as the last Zog Babylon was. Later on in that chapter, in verse 37, he says, "But as in the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be." Because he says, just as in Noah's day. But with far less warning, because Noah supposedly went ahead and went around to the Israelites when he was 480 years old. He went ahead and said, "Look, you see Grandpa there? Daddy died at what? At the age of 770. And most of you people who are not born into this line, this pure-blooded line, you will have days that are limited to 120 years. It said so at the beginning of the chapter, Genesis chapter 6. That these people were at war with each other because they were Mamzers. A Mamzer is war with himself here, much less with everybody else. Do you not think that Brian Reel is at war with himself? You know, his nigger and his gook and his beaner and what little white he has, all at war with each other? All of schizophrenia, all of delusions, with nothing more than dreams of violence and hatred? And the answer of sure it is. But Jesus Christ said, verse 27, "But as in the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days which were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark." Noah went ahead and preached for 120 years, from the age of 480 to a couple months after his 600th birthday. Verse 39, "And they knew not until the flood came and took them all away. So shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. There shall be two in the field, and one shall be taken and the other left. So two women shall be grinding at the mill. The one shall be taken, the other left." Well, folks, that goes ahead and shows that even within a family, even within friendship, that one shall be gone and the other shall be saved. Even among the whites which are left, one shall be taken, the other left. That should go ahead and give you reason to think. Not to go ahead and think about, "Oh, how can I go ahead and sin until the very last minute here and then go ahead and somehow be saved," but rather to make sure that you are in right with Yahweh from day one, starting now. "Watch therefore, for you know not what hour your Lord does come." Because, folks, unlike Noah pointing to a grandpa, Methuselah, and saying, "Methuselah should have died before, because Daddy was short-lived, relatively. He only lived to be 770. But Grandpa here, he's going to live to be longer, older than Adam, the very first man. Because they all had a little bit less lives here than Adam did. But Grandpa here, when he dies, there's going to be a flood. And guess what? There's going to come rain from the sky. And they say, "Rain? Rain? What the hell are you talking about? Is not the water bubbling up from these limestone caves underneath us? Is not the ground firm, and does it not bring up water from below? There's no rain." Well, folks, after that rain, there wasn't very much rain left. That's why the Tarim Basin became a desert. But going on, verse 43. But know this, that the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come. He would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken into. Verse 44. Therefore, be you also ready for such an hour as you think not the Son of Man cometh. So folks, when you think it's not going to be coming, guess what? He will come. And he will not go ahead and give notice. He will not go ahead and give a sign. For those of you who ask for a sign, I've had somebody go ahead and come to me and ask, what is the sign of the times, Martin? And folks, does it not say in the Bible that a wicked and adulterous generation looks for a sign? There's not going to be a sign. Folks, Jesus Christ didn't have much use for the Whiggers of his day. Do you think he's going to have much use for the Whiggers of this day? He's going to have even less than he did have use for the Whiggers of his day. Now, since this is a Christian Identity Orthodox, i.e. Comparean sermon, I'm going to go ahead in the next segment tell what Bertrand Comparé had to say about this matter. Bertrand Comparé had the ability to cover in 2,000 words what lesser DSCI teachers and pastors, including this one, including myself, couldn't cover cogently in 20,000. So we're going to go ahead and have a number of hymns. And let me go ahead and pause this for a second. Okay, the next hymn after this segment will be By the Waters of Babylon. It's a rather, people have gone ahead and sung a popular version of it. But when they talk about happy he that rewardeth thee just as thou hast done, they're talking about taking the children of these Babylonians and swinging them by their ankles and breaking their skulls against the rocks. Yahweh is not a nice God to sinners, and certainly not to Babylonians. Today's Babylonians are the Jews and Shabbos Wiggers and Mamzers who support the Sog Babylonian system. And Yahweh hates these people. He hates their children. He hates everything to do with them. Now, I'm going to go ahead and then have between the two Comparean readings, Faith of Our Fathers. And then at the very end of this service, we'll be safely through another week. Because Saturday is the end of the week. Under Yahweh's calendar, Saturday is the Sabbath. So when you hear this on Sunday, chances are you've been safely through another week. And I'm going to go ahead and pray that those of you who are the found sheep of the house of Israel and those who are the lost sheep who are looking to find their way, that you will make it safely through another week until next week when we can have another service. And for those of you who are not, those who are Jews or Mamzers, I hope that essentially that Yahweh's justice will catch up with you and destroy you absolutely and make your lives miserable. Because folks, I have nothing but Genesis 3:15 hatred for those of you who, being Whiggers, cannot behave yourself and who wish to go ahead and be damned. And for those of you Mamzers and Jews who are already damned and who know nothing but evil. And for those of you, you're either traitors, but essentially you're in two categories. You're either sheep or you're goats. As time goes on, I will go ahead and learn some hymns that I didn't really sing very much when I was in the Worldwide Church of God as a young person. And we'll have more and more hymns come up. So anyway, the next segments will be reading and commentary on Bertrand Comparé's commentary about how there was not a worldwide flood and how most of you folks have been deceived as to it. So anyway, that's going to be the end for this segment here. So hail victory, folks. By the waters of Babylon,
There we wept and there sat down, hung our hearts on the willow trees. Zion, yet we remember thee. Then our captors required of us, sing a song of Zion now. Could we sing the eternal songs by the waters of Babylon? Let my right hand forget her skill, if Jerusalem I forget, if I fail to remember thee, let my tongue cleave unto my mouth. But we thought of Jerusalem when we sat near Zion's stream, far above even our chief joy. We remember Jerusalem. In that day of Jerusalem's fall, when the children of Edom said, down with her, down into the ground, even to the foundations. O thou daughter of Babylon, to thy ruin hastening on. Happy he that rewardeth thee, just as thou unto us hast done.
Okay, folks, we're back. I am going to go ahead and read from Pastor Bertrand Comparé's essay, biblical essay, scriptural essay, Noah's Flood Was Not Worldwide. And I will, of course, go ahead and paraphrase some of the stuff. I'm not going to go ahead and just read word for word Pastor Bertrand Comparé, but I will try to go ahead and pretty well stick to what he covers, because he is far more focused than what I will ever be. Bertrand Comparé wrote, among the many mistakes and unscriptural notions commonly taught in nearly all churches is the idea that the flood, quotes, mentioned in the Bible covered all the earth and drowned everybody on earth, excepting only Noah and his family who escaped death by being on the ark. Some churches have firmly insisted that the Bible says this when there is ample proof that the flood was not worldwide. With this teaching, the churches have destroyed the faith of multitudes of people in the Bible. They have made atheists or agnostics out of hundreds of thousands of people who might become Christian if they had only been taught the truth about the Bible. And folks, now I'm going ahead and adding to what Bertrand Comparé says, is that this has been done deliberately. It has been done deliberately to make the Bible seem foolish, to make it seem that it says nonsense, that it says stuff which cannot be proven, which can be easily disproven, in order to turn people away from Yahweh and turn the white Adamite away from his own true church, his own true religion. Remember, the Adamite has the word and the law of Yahweh written on his heart. Now, Bertrand Comparé quite well understood is that there were not floods. I mean, one of the things which went ahead and brought about Darwin, or the belief in Darwinism, the belief in evolution, was that people could easily see that there was no worldwide flood. A worldwide flood explaining everything, including areas where there was no worldwide flood? Why, you go ahead and you disprove that there's a worldwide flood, then you go ahead and you disprove the entire Bible. And that's an easy thing to do. But you have Baal priests and idiots who deliberately created the story that there was a worldwide flood. And Bertrand Comparé sets them straight. Getting back to Comparé. Part of this mistaken idea about the flood is due to the many mistranslations found in the commonly used King James Version of the Bible. Also, part of it appears plainly to be false if you merely carefully read even the King James Version. Let's take a look at it. In Genesis chapter 6, we read that God found the people so corrupt that he regretted he had ever created them. So he decided to wipe them out by a flood. Now, an aside, that is, when you see that when men began to multiply upon the face of the earth and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were fair, and they took them wives of all whom they chose. And the Lord said, My spirit shall not always strive with man, for that he is also flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, and they bore children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Well, folks, that's what you end up having when you end up having misbegotten, mongrelized people, which Deuteronomy 23, verse 2, calls mamzers, i.e. miscegenated bastards. One of the worst, evil, most vicious miscegenated bastard I've ever seen is Brian Real, who calls himself Sword Brethren, and who these Jews, like Eli James, the Chicago Sephardi Jew boy, and also William Fink, as another Jersey City Ashkenazi Jew boy, keep on bringing about, along with Clifton M. Iser, who has decided to do his best to pervert Bertrand Comperet's teachings. Now, the Church of True Israel was a split off back from the days of Pastor Richard Butler. They did not like the way that Butler was bringing his church, that he was bringing in criminals, and they decided to continue with the dual seed line Christian identity message, but for underground churches, which were 1, 2, and 3 family congregations. And when the internet came up back in the mid-90s, 1995, 1996, they set this thing up in order to preserve Bertrand Comperet's original teachings. And I noticed that they no longer carry Clifton Emmaheiser, and I think that is a good thing. So, www.churchoftrueisrael.com. I'm going ahead and reading the Bertrand Comperet essay from there. But the reason that things became so perverted is that Yahweh allowed free will, and Yahweh allowed these demons. Yahweh allowed these non-whites. Yahweh allowed all sorts of people, and he allowed the Uyghurs of Noah's day to interbreed with their daughters, and I guess with their sons too. And as a result, it would seem outside these super hybrid version giants, it was sort of like these demons creating, you know, just like Satan was the father of Cain, and Cain was quite a strong man, quite a man with a good deal of drive and power and ambition, the father of the Jews. You know, he was sort of like a giant on the earth here. Some dual seed line Christian identity believers believe that he became known as Sargon the Great, Sargon the Conqueror. But getting on with it. These hybrids, some of them like Og and Sihon, were literally 12 feet tall, and it says in the Bible that they were still carried on after that, after the flood. So like Bertrand Comperet says, if you go ahead and you read the Bible, did you not have giants afterwards? You had Og and Sihon, who supposedly escaped the flood by clambering aboard the ark and being a sort of stowaway on the outside. We're not allowed on the inside, of course. But you also, I guess they clambered off, but you also had these Nephilim and these Rephilim, like Goliath and his brothers. Six toes, six fingers, six toes. on each hand and foot. 9 foot tall, not 12 foot tall like Sion. Sion would have made Goliath look like a, well, just a normal person at the time here. You know, Saul was supposedly head and shoulders above the Israelites, which meant that he was close to 7 foot tall. He was maybe 6 foot eight, 6 foot nine, 10, 11, 12, maybe 7 foot tall. But Goliath was 9 foot tall, but Og and Sihon, blonde, blue-eyed Amorite giants, were 12 feet tall. Because even after David conquered the Ammonites, you could go ahead and see Goliath's bed, or Sihon's bed, and it was 13 foot tall. Which meant that Sihon was 12 foot tall and weighed quite a bit. And he was probably even longer lived than Methuselah. That Newton County pig that knocked out my teeth didn't help my enunciation very well. But also, some of this hybridization also went ahead and ruined the living stock, because Yahweh says that he was going to go ahead and limit the days of man to 120 days. Now, did he limit Noah's lifetime? No. He extended Methuselah's in order to show for a sign. And I don't think Bertrand Comperé gets into that. But I'm going to go ahead and get back to Bertrand Comperé. But the reason for the flood is because of this miscegenation. It did not occur. Bertrand Comperé makes the point that it did not occur outside this basin, the Tarim Basin, north of the Himalayan Mountains. It did not occur, drowned out the Chinese. It did not drown out the niggers. It did not drown the Adamites, who had obediently moved to Europe. It did not even remotely touch the American Indians, so-called American Indians. It didn't touch the nigger Dravidians on the south side of the Himalayas. It only flooded out these Adamites who had moved to the east of Eden, to the east of the Garden of Eden, when Adam and Eve were driven out. So it only affected these Adamites who decided to get together and form their own white civilization. It was the very first Zog Babylon. Now, Babylon meant, Babel, 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 as in the time of Nimrod, but the whole thing was the same. The demand for unity, the demand of rulership under one man. And that man would, of course, be under Satan, not Yahweh, because Yahweh, what he favored, was separation, was segregation. He created the races separate. He created the six-day beasts of the field and put them in a certain place, and then he went ahead and created Adam. You can say he created Adam on the eighth day, and I do go ahead and often say that, but it's sort of like an allegory because there really was no eighth day. And you can say that he allowed the Jew to be born on the ninth day. And I've also gone ahead and mentioned that. I'm going to get back with Bertrand Comperé, but the reason that violence increased far more is that you had these diverse people living close to each other. And just as when you have niggers today rioting in Milwaukee and rioting in London and rioting wherever they can against stupid Uyghurs who allowed this thing to happen. And I'm quite sure that they had hate crime laws. I bet liberal Uyghurs were running wild, as in the days of Noah. They were doing whatever they could, although they hadn't advanced the despotism quite as far. But folks, you could have an efficient despotism in a police state with just knives and swords and spears. You could have a police state back then. So you doubtless had, among the Adamites, increasingly, more and more and more of a police state, to where in the 480th year of Noah's birth, it was not the same as when Noah was born, when his father, Lamech, when his grandfather, Methuselah, seen this new baby. And in order to preserve the long-lived line, Noah had to marry his first cousin. Just like Seth had to marry his own sister, one of his sisters. And by then, Yahweh had had enough, and he'd gone ahead and limited the lifespan of most of these hybrids to 120 years. And from what I gather, they were violent, they were dangerous then, acting just like niggers do now, just acting like mamsers do now, acting like you would if you ended up having Brian Real running wild back then, or McFag, Steve Elder running wild back then. Eli James might have been far, you know, you might have had an Eli James character, and I know you probably more than likely had a Bill Fink, and the rest of these mamsers and mongrels pretend to be white, and then showing by the show of their countenance, and also by the fact they were not very long lived, that they were indeed the children of Satan. But getting back on to Compre. So, Yahweh found the people so corrupt he regretted that he had ever created them, so he decided to wipe them out by flood. He warned righteous Noah. Righteous. Pure-blooded, of pure generation Noah, the coming flood, and told Noah to build a great boat, or ark, in which he and his family might find safety and where they might preserve a few of each kind of the animals from that area. In chapter 7, it tells how Noah received the final warning that the time was at hand he should move into the ark. Well, that's Genesis chapter 6. Then it says, according to the King James Version, and it came to pass after 7 days that the waters of the flood were upon the earth. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, that same day, and I'm looking at that same day, were the foundations of the great deep broke up, and the windows of heaven were opened, and the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights, and the waters prevailed. By the way, 40 days and 40 nights, sort of like when Jesus fasted 40 days and 40 nights. That's an allegory of pretty well, it's an allegory of what happened in the days of Noah. And the waters prevailed and increased greatly upon the earth. And the ark went upon the waters. And the waters prevailed exceedingly upon the earth. And all the high hills that were under the whole heaven were covered. 15 cubits upwards did the water prevail. Now, 15 cubits, that would be 15, and, you know, multiply by 15, you know, 15 and a half, and that would be, 15 feet plus another, another half feet, so that'd be about 23 feet, 22 and a half feet. Upwards did the waters prevail, and the mountains were covered, and all flesh died that moved upon the earth, both of fowl and of cattle, and of beast, and every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth, and every man. And the waters prevailed upon the earth 150 days, and God remembered Noah and every living thing, and all the cattle that was with him in the ark. And God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the water assuaged. And the waters returned from the earth continually, and at the end of 150 days the waters were abated. And the ark rested in the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, upon the mountains of Ararat. And the waters decreased continually until the 10th month. In the 10th month, on the first day of the month, were the tops of the mountains seen. Now, Bertrand Compre's Ray goes on. Now, first, let's see what the translators have done to what Moses originally wrote. You remember the King James Version says that the rain was upon the earth, and the waters increased greatly upon the earth, and that all flesh died that moved upon the earth? Definitely not. Remember that in Genesis 4:14, when God had driven Cain away in punishment for his murder of Abel, the King James Version quotes Cain as saying, "Behold, you have driven me out this day from the face of the earth." So what did Cain do? Did he climb on his rocket ship and take off for outer space? And the answer is, of course not. He was not driven from the face of the earth, and he never said so. Only the translator said so. Now, I used to wonder, this is aside from Bertrand Compre, in Herbert Armstrong's church, why they said there was just Adam and Eve. And I always used to wonder, well, where did Cain go? Where did he go ahead and get his wife? I mean, you would think that Adam and Eve would definitely put their foot down at marrying their daughter to someone who had murdered his brother, their son. Where did Cain get his wife? Well, answer, there were plenty of other people. Just like there was no worldwide flood, same too, is that there were other people other than Adam. That's why Cain was giving the mark of Cain, a big old Jew nose, because he was the first Jew descended from Satan. And he found plenty of people to build a city called Enoch, that many people believe is ancient Erech, which is still in Iraq, in Mesopotamia. So where did Cain get his wife? And the answer is he found plenty of women. And some of them were white. Some of them were these Cro-Magnons who were still running around and being replaced by these Adamites. Found plenty of women. Plenty of women. And so he went ahead and set up his own city. He organized these people. He organized them under the principles of Tsar of Babylon, to where the Jew goes ahead and runs the wigger and lives off the wigger and dominates the wigger and tells the wigger what to do. The Babylonian Zog system of absolute power and minimal responsibility for parasites and regime criminals and Jews. So did Cain get aboard a flying rocket ship and go to someplace else? And the answer is no. He went ahead and went somewhere else. He wasn't driven from the earth. Cain had, in fact, 99.99% of the earth to wander around in once he was driven out from among Adam and Eve. Getting on it. The word Cain used was Ad Alma, meaning the ground. God had told him that his farming would no longer be successful, and Cain says, "You have driven me out of the ground." And Bertrand Comperet says, "You'll probably notice that Cain's descendants are not farmers. They run pawn shops and money lending institutions." There are some who disagree with that interpretation, to where after seven generations, Cain's bunch, the Jews, would be allowed, of course, to go ahead and farm the ground. Cain, it was said that Cain used to rape the ground. Cain used to, be rather rough on the ground, just like modern agribusiness companies, and he used to try to create hybrids and all this sort of thing, just like Monsanto, another evil Jew sort of corporation, does today. But anyway, generally farming is hard work, and Jews tend to avoid hard work because they're parasites. But getting on with it, when we come to Genesis chapter, and it should be 7, where it was talking about the flood, wherever it says the flood covered the earth, the Hebrew word used in the original writing by Moses was eretz, meaning the land. The flood did cover the particular land where it occurred. That is, it was a local flood which covered one particular region or land, not the whole earth, not the entire earth. Again, notice it specifies 1.5 cubits upward did the waters prevail and the mountains were covered. In ancient times, two different lengths of the cubit were in use. The sacred cubit of 25 inches and the comet cubit of 5/8 inches. Now, as an aside, most of the time when I've heard cubit mentioned, you're talking essentially about the length of from the elbow to the longest middle finger. And in many cases, usually the cubit was usually 18 inches. But therefore, the waters rose above the tops of the mountains is speaking of either 25 feet 9 inches or 31 feet 3 inches, according to which cubit you use. Well, I went ahead and mentioned 23 feet. if this meant that all the mountains on Earth were covered, the water would have had to cover Mount Everest, which is nearly 6 miles high. Therefore, the Earth would be covered by water 6 miles deep. In that case, where could it have run off to when the flood, flood subsided? No, I don't mean the Bible was that badly mistaken, only that the translators made this mistake. The translators took the Hebrew word Eretz, which means that land, and translated it to mean the whole world. A little later, we look back over the evidence, which proves where that land was. If the whole earth was covered by 6 miles of water, then all nations must have been completely exterminated. Yet Babylon, Egypt, and Chinese history runs right through the period without a break. Now I'm going to disagree with saying that Babylon, Egyptian, and Chinese history runs through that particular time, because Babylon was created after the flood. The Bible gives the date of the flood as commencing in 2345 BC and ending in 2344 BC. Well, later on, it seems like they moved the time back by about 800 years to 3142 or 3145. I forget which. In Lower Sumer, later called Chaldea, which occupied the plains of Shinar, to which Noah's family journeyed after the flood, the city of Ur of the Chaldees was the leading city from about 2400 BC until about 2285 BC, and its history is not broken by any flood in this period. Further to the north, Babylon was rising to power from around 2400 BC and reached a great height of civilization under the famous King Hammurabi, who lived at the same time as the Hebrew patriarch Abraham, around 2250 BC. And again, there was no break in this history due to a flood. In Egypt, the 11th dynasty began to reign around 2375 over a great and powerful nation. The 11th dynasty ruled from about 2212 BC and was followed by the 12th dynasty, which ruled around 2000 BC. And that's under King Amenhotep I. There was no break in the 11th dynasty of the time of Noah's flood around 2345 BC. The nation continued to be large and powerful throughout this period. Accurate history of China begins nearly 3000 BC. The Shu King Historic Record of China, which shows that King Yao came to the throne in 2356 BC, 11 years before the start of Noah's flood, and ruled China for many years after the flood. During the reign of Yao, the Shu King reports that the Huang Ho River, which drained mountains in a great basin of Xiaqing province, had excessive floods for three generations. Here again, there is no break in history. The Chinese nation was not wiped out. Its own records show that continued in existence right through the period of Noah's flood. Therefore, the Bible is correct in stating that the flood covered only Eretz, the land. The translators are wrong when they change the meaning of what Moses really wrote in Genesis 7 and say the flood covered all the earth. Now, as an aside, I have my questions here. I'm not quite sure. You know, I mean, there's a difference between 800 years between what the AIT course says and what Bertrand Comparé says. And I'm going to go ahead and leave that to a side. But what? Bertrand Comparé and the Sargon dating would probably be closer than to what the AIT says. And folks, I'm going to have to go ahead, and just like everything else, I'm going to have to go ahead and look at it again later on. But right now, I'm pretty well reading from Bertrand Comparé. The point that Bertrand Comparé is trying to make is that there was no worldwide flood. There can't be. There can't be, but it can be shown by what little there is of history. Now, history is pretty well a lie when it was made up, just like a newspaper does or a TV show does. It's a lie when it makes up. The people who are in power, the people who want to be in power, tell lies. And folks, what happened thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. Heck, in fact, what happened before you were born in many cases has to be taken with a large dose of faith and of skepticism as well. So, getting on with it. This leaves us ready to inquire about where the flood did occur. For this, we will have to start with Adam and Eve and trace where they and their descendants went. They started out in the Garden of Eden. Genesis 2:10 tells us that a river went out of Eden, and the river divided into four streams. It names those four rivers. The Pison and the Gihon, neither of which can be identified among the rivers existing today, and Hiddekel, which is the ancient name for the Tigris River, and the Euphrates. The Tigris and Euphrates rise in what is today extreme southeastern Turkey, a little north of modern Iraq, making some allowances for the fact that many rivers have changed their courses considerably in the course of several thousand years. This still placed the Garden of Eden at the northern end of ancient Akkad. So, pretty well in northern Mesopotamia is where they believe the Garden of Eden was at. They do know that it was, well, the Tigris and Euphrates are still with us. In the AIT course, it says that the Pison and Gihon were rivers which went, were the Indus, and the Indus and another was the Oxus, which flows east. So you have in a fairly big area where the Garden of Eden was. When Adam and Eve were driven out of the Garden of Eden, Genesis 3:24 tells us that God placed cherubim with a flaming sword on the east side of the Garden of Eden to keep Adam and Eve from returning and having access to the Tree of Life. If this guard were to accomplish anything, it must have been placed between Adam and the Garden of Eden. So we see that Adam and Eve were driven out to the east. From Eden, Adam's course would have naturally led him across northern Iraq, around the southern end of the Caspian Sea, into what was formerly called Chinese Turkestan, is today known as Xinjiang Province in the extreme west of China, where the Uyghurs live, I guess. In the southern part of Xinjiang, there is a great basin rimmed by high mountains on all sides, but with an outlet on the eastern end of it, through the mountains where the headwaters of the Huang Ho River, the Yellow River, rises. This basin is today nearly all desert, but bears evidence of a fertile and heavily inhabited past. Explorers have found ruins of ancient cities uncovered by the drifting sands of the desert. Also, the known geological structure shows that in ancient times, at least, beneath this desert lay an enormous underground natural reservoirs, caverns filled with water. It is the same geological structure which furnishes artesian water in many places of the world today. These underground reservoirs were capped by waterproof layers of rock, which kept the waters beneath from outflowing into the land surface above them. In the mountain rim basin, then a fertile, well-populated land, Adam and Eve, or at least their descendants of a few generations, settled. You who listen to this program, Bertrand Comparé's program, already know that Adam was not the first man. He was only the first man in the present white race. And Bertrand Comparé says present white race. He's correct about that. There were Cro-Magnons who scientists believe were indeed white. But Adam, it says, was formed directly by Yahweh, that creation was already done. That the sixth day, the beasts of the world, beasts of the field, the cattle, and all the non-white races, and some of the white ones, had already been created on the sixth day, in the aeons of time leading up to it. So Adam was created there. The creation was not, you know, the creation was made for Adam, not Adam for the creation, like the Jew, William Finkelschini, likes to pretend it is. No, he was the first man of the present white race. Now, if you're a pure white race, you might very well have had Cro-Magnon ancestors. I don't know. It's such a long time ago. There's already a dispute here between the AIT and Bertrand Comparé, who wrote most of the AIT, of about 800 years. So there's a dispute of 800 years, approximately 5,000 years ago. Well, he's not making any point about what happened 30,000 years ago, and neither am I. Going on, Adam and Eve found this land, which they'd come, already populated by an Asiatic people among whom they had to live. Through the following generations, the inevitable happened. Wherever there is integration, intermarriages, and mongrelization of the races occurs. If God had no purposes in mind which could not be properly served by the Asiatic and Negro races, there would be no reason for him to create Adam. Neither could these purposes which Adam and his descendants were intended to serve be fulfilled by a mongrelized race. The consequences of this mongrelization are described in Genesis 6:5. And God saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart were only evil continually. And I've already mentioned in this sermon what ends up happening when you ended up having mongrelization. Mamzers are, they don't have any souls, they don't have any thoughts except for evil. I mean, that's all Brian Reel has ever accomplished is evil. That's all Eli James has ever accomplished is evil. That's all Bill Fink has ever accomplished is evil. And that's all that the people who go ahead and hang around them accomplish is evil, because they are evil people. They allow evil. They hide evil. They cover evil. They do just like the Adamites did. Again, we find the mistranslated word earth, which only means the land, that particular land. There is reason for using that Hebrew word. For this is a place where integration and mongrelization had taken place, with its degenerative effects as compared to the qualities possessed by each race separately. What Bertrand Comparé is talking about is the very first Song of Babylon. He's talking about what happens when you have a white race which forgets itself, which allows mongrelization, which then goes ahead and passes more and more and more laws, because you have more and more evil people, because they're mixed. Every single cell of their body is at war with each other as they have differing impulses. Someone has gone ahead and said, if you go ahead and look at the aura of a mamzer or a mongrel, what you see is just a dead, dead paste. If you go ahead and look at the aura of a Jew, there is none. Except maybe an evil one. And that the aura of white people is a rather shining aura. And that is because you have been given the opportunity to have eternal life if you accept Jesus Christ as your Savior. But only white people are given that option. Now, there can be righteous mamzers who sort of understand themselves. They did not go ahead and ask to be born, and they just were. And for those, I say, live an honest life, and you will have a long life by following Christian principles, even if they are somewhat unfamiliar to you. Be good. Seek peace, pursue it. Understand yourself. And in many cases, some of these mongrels act better than some figures do. But going on with it, we find confirmation in the reason why God spared Noah. In Genesis 6 verse 9, your King James Version Bible tells you that Noah was perfect in his generations, a meaningless phrase. When anything in the King James Version of the Bible fails to make good sense, it is a sign you should go behind the mistranslations of the Masoretic text, which has been tampered with by Jews, and see what the words were in the original Hebrew or Greek. The word here is translated generations, was the Hebrew word to ladah, which means ancestry. That means Noah was perfect in his ancestry, a purebred, not a mongrel. Noah and his family were the last remaining pure-blooded Adamites in the world. Therefore, God needed to save them to carry out the purposes that he had planned for the Adamic people. The mongrelized people, among whom Noah and his family lived, must be removed, or they would be a trap, which would eventually lead to the complete end of the pure-blooded Adamites. And folks, that's exactly what has happened in Zog Babylon today. Exactly. You no longer have, you have some whites, but they want to die. Uyghurs want to die. And they are doing their best to die. They are doing their dead level best to die. Now, way back when Noah lived, and I believe that there were some Adamites, but they were just like the Uyghurs today, weak, running around dithering, like running to and fro, like I sing in my song, Uyghur Problem. And they were weak of will. There was something wrong with them, and it might have very well been, if it wasn't genetic because of Mongolization, it was because of environment. But I'm sure that Noah found some Adamites who had moved, who had decided we do not want to live in Zog Babylon. Folks, if there was another new continent, a new continent, free, or even if it was inhabited by red niggers or black niggers or something like that, and it was free, what happens is I would take myself and my family who wanted to go, and others who wanted to follow. And I would, just like Daniel Boone and the rest of them, move into that land and conquer and thrash and exterminate and set aside the red niggers who lived there. And I think that there were Adamites who did that at that time. There were other people. There were obedient Adamites. Because you go ahead and read in other accounts where Noah had 120 years to preach to these people. What was Yahweh's intent? And Yahweh's intent was to destroy the very first Zog of Babylon. Because if it continued, it would become a mongolized, miscegenated mass, which would be technically advanced, and it would be a source of contagion and a source of conquest before it fell in. So Yahweh, seeing what was happening, he decided to go ahead and destroy it. Not destroy the niggers who are not under the law, the chinks who are not under the law, the American Indians that are not under the law, or the Adamites who had moved on, who didn't like the bright sights and bright city lights of gay Paris. And by we're talking about gay Paris, we're talking about homosexualized San Francisco, wherever Uyghurs run to go ahead and use their attributes for perversion. All you had to do, if you were an Adamite who did not like what was going on, is that all you had to do was head out of where you lived, because it was not a worldwide flood. You could head out if you were white. You could head out, but, just like today's, niggers who live in Milwaukee or wherever, they had no intention of moving out. They had still had Uyghur. They still had whitey. They still had off-whitey to go ahead and live off of. Just like today, the third Zog Babylon, the third and the final. So, getting on with it, have we any other evidence to support our view that this is the region, the Tarim Basin, where Adam and Eve and their descendants settled? Yes, remember that Adam and Eve were driven out of Eden to the eastward? Later, when Cain murdered Abel and as a punishment was banished from the land of Adam, where Adam and Eve lived, Genesis 4:13 says that Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod on the east of Eden. The Hebrew word Nod means wandering. That is the upper Tigris and Euphrates valleys at the north of Eden. These rivers were running swiftly downhill from their mountain sources. Therefore, they cast themselves deep channels in the ground. Even today, we find traces of the ancient diversion dams built by the ancients to raise the water level up close to the surface of the ground so they would not have to pump it up so high to get to their irrigation canals. Further to the south, where the lower Tigris and Euphrates valleys, where the slope is no longer so steep, the accumulation of silt picked up by the rivers where they ran swiftly now is settling to the bottom of the riverbeds, constantly raising the level so that every high water season, the rivers overflow their banks and flood the valleys. This is exactly the same as we have in our own Mississippi Valley, like you used to have in the Nile. These annual floods washed away the people's houses and sent them fleeing far away to high ground. Therefore, it is correctly called the land of Nod, the land of wandering. Here Cain settled and taught the people to build high dikes around the river banks, just as we have done around the banks of the Mississippi River. This enabled them to stop the annual floods so they could now build permanent cities of good houses in the lower Tigris and Euphrates valleys, the land then called by its own inhabitants Sumer, and later called Chaldea. Well, folks, the Dutch had the same thing, but what they did is that they would build big banks. They would go ahead and dredge out banks and literally create Holland from the sea, and they were doing that by the time of Julius Caesar. But what they did before they figured out windmills and that, all that sort of thing, to pump out the water, what they would do is that they would build on the estuary of the Elbe, they would build mounds of earth and put their household there, and then go down during the summer and plant their grains then. And that's what they would do then, and that's pretty well what Compre is telling that Cain taught the people who lived, non-Adamites who lived there. Going on, in a very few places, the Bible calls this plain of Shinar. That is, Cain went back westward from where Adam and Eve lived. It was thus that Cain started his great empire. Yes, Cain is a well-known historical character found not only in the Bible, but he is known in history under another name. And Bertrand Compre alludes to him being known as Sargon the Great, the world emperor. Cain established an empire which extended from the Persian Gulf to the Mediterranean Sea and even took in some of the larger islands in the Mediterranean Sea. Someday I will tell you about Cain and his empire, but that is another story, and Bertrand Compre does cover another one. Another bit of evidence is found in Genesis 11:2, which tells us that after the flood, Noah's descendants journeyed from the east until they came to the land of Shinar. Therefore, they must have come from some place east of the Tigris and Euphrates valleys. The only place where such a flood, as the Bible describes, could have occurred eastward from the Tigris and Euphrates is the mountain basin in Sikiand, which I've been talking about. Another bit of evidence is found in the high water mark, found in many places along the mountains which rim this basin, showing that one time the basin was a lake extending to this well-marked shoreland. The mountains which rim this valley were not fully covered, for many of them ranged from 16,000 to 25,000 feet in height, and even one rises over 28,000 feet. But within the basin are several smaller mountains which could be fully covered by a flood within the higher rim of the valley. In short, this basin, through which flows the Tarim River and which is sometimes known as the Tarim Basin in southern Sikiang, is identified as the site of Noah's flood. Now, folks, I'm going to go ahead and take a break, sing a hymn, and we'll be back in just a little bit. So essentially, Bertrand Compre has covered how this was not a worldwide flood. It was a flood which was a local flood in the Sikiang Valley north of the Himalayas. He goes ahead and points out that what the reason for the flood was because of mongrelization, because the Adamites, who had pretty well fled away from Sargon the Great's empire under Cain, had, in like today here, they had gone ahead and started themselves out as a great freedom republic or whatever, where Adamites could be Adamites. The sons of Adam could go ahead and interbreed. But what they did is that when they left there, they went ahead and interbreed, and they used their freedom to mongrelize. And the end of that was violence, because violence and schizophrenia follows mongrelization, sure as night follows day. So we're going to go ahead and take a break. I'm going to go ahead and sing a hymn or two, and then we'll be back. Hail Victory. God of our fathers, whose almighty hand leads forth in beauty all the starry band of shining worlds in splendor through the sky. Our grateful songs before thy throne arise. Thy love divine has led us in the path. In this free land, by thee our lot is cast. Be thou our ruler, guardian, guide, and stay. Of thy word our law, thy paths our chosen way. From war's alarms, from deadly pestilence, be thy strong arm our ever sure defense. Thy true religion in our hearts increase. Thy bounteous goodness nourish us in peace. Refresh thy people on their toilsome way. Lead us from night to never-ending day. Fill all our lives with love and grace divine. And glory, Lord, and praise be ever thine.
Okay, folks, we're back. I went ahead and covered about 60% of Bertrand Comparé's article asking about the worldwide flood and pointing out there was no worldwide flood. We went ahead and covered where the flood was, and Bertrand Comparé identifies it as the Tarim Basin, just north of the Himalayas, which was a basin where the Adamites had moved to. And there they found these Mongolian people, these Chinese people, and they interbred with them. But you also had demons interbreeding with them as well. And you had some Jews, and you had giants, and you had a number of people. And we also cover why the flood occurred. And the reason the flood occurred was that there was a sort of Zog Babylon in effect. It had possibly started out as a reaction against Cain and his world empire, or what followed as a world empire in the known world at the time. There was Europe, which was not explored except by some Adamites, and you had possibly the Cro-Magnon remnants who lived there. You had the Chinese who lived further to the east. You had the Negroes who lived off in Africa. You had the North Americans who probably the Adamites didn't know anything about. But you had these people who were descended from Adam and Eve and Seth. And you go ahead and read your books of Jasher and your books of Enoch and you read these other things. And essentially the line of Adam through Seth. Seth was a replacement for Abel, the line by whom Jesus Christ would later be born, and from whom you chosen seed of Israel's race, would be descended. All of us are descended from Seth. So, I went ahead and covered, you know, through Bertrand Comparé, I went ahead and amplified him. Essentially, he said it was the Tarim Basin in southwest China, where I guess the Uyghurs live, the Tibetans live, where a number of people live. which used to be a rather fertile plain, a fertile basin, and that this flood had gone ahead and spread out. We also covered why it is spread out. It spread out because this Adamic people were becoming increasingly mongrelized. And I have called it Zog Babylon the first. You know, the first, but not the final. You see, Yahweh wasn't ready to bring Jesus Christ into the picture. He was closer. He was closer in time to the flood than what we are to Jesus Christ in turn. But it was such a long time ago. In fact, perhaps he was a little bit, you know, between you had the flood, and then 2400 years later you had Jesus Christ, and then 2,000 years later you have us. And the very first Zog Babylon, there really were no written records, or none that we can find, or we have found yet. So, in many cases, we don't know exactly what did happen. But we can go ahead and judge by what is happening now as to what might have very well happened then. And what you had is that you had a white people, a gifted people, a people who sought freedom, who went ahead and found license. And in that license, they miscegenated away, like the Aryans did in India. They miscegenated away, and then you end up having misery. You end up having violence. You ended up having all the things that come with the racially polluted and the mixed, where every little mamzer or mongrel is at war with itself. And it doesn't have any ability or level to seek a higher level because it can't. It's not only at war with itself, its virtues have been compromised by that mongrelization. So what we had is we had the very first Zog Babylon, and you possibly had some Adamites who got disgusted with that. And just like Daniel Boone decided to move their way around Cain and get to Europe, or get to wherever, but probably not very many, but some. And it was quite possible to go ahead and do that. If you wanted to escape the flood, you did not need to build a boat like Noah did. Someone once asked me, how come Yahweh didn't just go ahead and flood out Ur of the Chaldees? And the answer, why did he just simply have Abraham move to Canaan? Jew Central. Like moving to Manhattan, New York, from Manhattan, Kansas. And the answer is that Yahweh wanted to supplant the Canaanites with the Israelites, but that didn't altogether work. In many cases, the Canaanite Jews went ahead and wormed their way, just like they always have, into the white man, into the Israelite. But you go ahead and read in other accounts that for 120 years, Noah went ahead and pointed out to his grandfather, Methuselah, who lived the longest of all the patriarchs, 960 years, and said, hey, when grandpa dies, this flood will be at hand. They said, flood, what are you talking about? Flood, what are you talking about? Rain, what's rain? Rain comes from the ground here. It comes bubbling out of the ground. There's no rain. What are you talking about? No rain at all. What are you talking about? Well, they soon found out, didn't they? Or they soon enough found out within a week after Methuselah died. But getting on with it, I'm going to go ahead and cover the rest of Bertrand Comparé, and I'm going to go ahead and wind up this sermon. So, in your King James, you know, getting back to Comparé, in your King James Version Bible, Genesis, it should say, it says 7:11. I don't know what the heck it is. It does say 7:11. I'm wrong, and Bertrand Comparé is right. It said, in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day, of the month, the same day where all the foundations of the great deep broken up. And the windows of heaven were open. The rain was upon the earth 40 days and night. nuts. More careful translation makes clear what really happened. In Moffat's modern English translation was read, "The foundations of the great abyss burst, and the sluices of heaven were open." In Smith and Godspeed's American translation, it says, "The foundation of the great abyss were broken again, and the windows of the heavens were opened." That is, a great earthquake broke up this waterproof layer of rock over the immense water-filled abyss or cavern beneath this Tarim Basin, causing the floor of the valley to settle and allowed the enormous underground reservoir to overflow and submerge the valley floor. The great earthquake in the Himalaya Mountains about 10 years ago produced similar effects in some places. Of course, the 40 days of torrential rains added to the flood. This filled the valley high enough to submerge the low mountains which were inside the valley, exactly as Genesis 7:19-20 says. Don't be misled by the translations. All the high hills were under the whole heaven were covered. The word mistranslated heaven is merely the Hebrew word shalmeh, meaning the sky. Since this Tarim Basin is somewhat more than 350 miles wide by more than 650 miles long, all the sky visible from anywhere near the center of the valley could cover only this valley, and therefore only those lower mountains which were in the valley itself. But what about Genesis 8:4, reading, "And the ark rested in the seventh month on the 12th day of the month, when the mountains of Ararat." Sometimes failure to mistranslate can be as misleading as mistranslation. Most people understand this to mean Mount Ararat in Armenia, some 16,000 miles west of the Tarim Basin. This is not what the Bible says. First of all, note that it says mountains of Ararat, mountains being the plural, while Mount Ararat in Armenia is only a single peak. Moreover, Mount Ararat in Armenia was known until comparatively recent times as Mount Massus. I guess that's where the word Massus comes from. And nobody had ever heard of it being called Mount Ararat in Bible times. Furthermore, the Hebrew word Ararat means only the tops of the hills. Therefore, correctly translated, Genesis 8:4 merely says that the ark came to rest upon the tops of the high hills, some of the lower mountains which were within the valley. A recent newspaper... Okay, I end up having a little computer move here. A recent newspaper report mentions an expedition equipped with the latest electronic equipment which is going to Mount Ararat in Armenia to find the ark. The expedition will melt the ice which covers the ark by coating it with black powdered carbon. They won't find the ark because it is not there. Several expeditions have gone to Mount Ararat to find the ark. Some of them got well within sight of a mass on the side of the mountain, which from that particular point of view looked to be shaped somewhat like a ship. That point has been very carefully inspected from the air by airplanes flying over it very close. It has proved to be nothing more than a ledge of rock, which at times does give a silhouette shaped like a ship when seen from the right directions. I need not mention many places such as Grand Canyon, etc., where similar ship rocks can be seen, and none of them are Noah's Ark. And folks, if you were able to go ahead and go to Mount Ararat in Turkey, well, why hasn't it been seen before? And the answer is it's not there. So when we carefully examine the whole affair and correct mistranslations, we find there's no conflict between what the Bible really says and either science or history. In fact, there never was any such conflict. It is only the preachers who find themselves contradicted by either science or history. And that is only because they either won't take the trouble to find out what the Bible really says, or they have made the mistranslation of supposedly sacred church doctrine, and now they are stuck with it. Don't let any church shake your faith in the Bible. The Bible is always right. Even the preachers are often wrong. Let's remember another thing. The Chinese historical record, the Shu King, records during the reign of King Yan at a time beginning about the date of Noah's flood, the Huang Ho River carried excessive floods for three generations. Drainage out of the Tarim Basin to the eastward would have been carried off from the Huang Ho River and would account for this. Now we come to another false doctrine taught by many churches. Since nobody survived in all the earth except Noah and his family, everyone now living is a descendant of Noah and related by blood, no matter what race they belong to. We have already seen that the flood did not cover the whole earth, but only one valley about 350 by 650 miles in size. Chinese history was not interrupted by, although they do report purely local floods in the Huang Ho Valley where the waters were draining off. We have seen that Egyptian history is not interrupted by the flood, so the continent of Africa was not touched by it, and the Negro race continued unaffected by it. It would be absurd to think that Noah and his wife, both of them being white, remember, a perfect generation, could have had one white child, one Negro child, and one Chinese child. Now, as an aside, that's exactly what the Worldwide Church of God used to teach, being one seedliners. They used to teach that Eve had many eggs and many different races here because the race was fluid and plastic. And as a result, Japheth married a yellow woman and Ham married a black woman, although he did marry a sort of a nigger. And therefore, what happened or what of that? And the answer is that this is complete nonsense. Complete nonsense. And by the way, Bertrand Comperay says that the Egyptians, who the Farrar Fenton later on calls the Mizraimites, from Ham's son Mizraim, from his white wife. Now, that's where there's a bit of difference of about 800 years or so. But it seems to me that Bertrand Comperay is essentially saying is that the Egyptians may or may not have been Adamites, or if they were Adamites, they were not descended from Noah. There were other white people around, and we, us Israelites, are, of course, descended from Noah. And by now, if we're white, we've all got Abraham's blood, just like we all have Noah's blood. There are no pure-blooded Cro-Magnons wandering the earth today. And pretty well, if you're of Adamic blood, chances are almost certain that you have Israelite blood in you. And therefore, you are the heirs of Abraham. But folks, the niggers are not descended from Noah. They're not descended from the rest. Remember, if Noah was a perfect or pure-blooded generation, and pretty well Yahweh flooded the Adamic civilization, the first Zog Babylon, because of all this race mixing, why would he allow the Ark, which is a refuge, to go ahead and have just nothing more than screwing the Mexican chambermaid, or the beaner, or the gook, or the nigger? And the answer is it's not going to happen. Now, Ham may have very well snuck aboard or brought aboard a Jew, Naamah, the sister of Tubal-Cain, to go ahead and give birth to this evil little bastard Canaan. But on the other hand, maybe Naamah was not even on the freaking board, on the boat, ever, because she wasn't in the Tarim Basin. We don't really know. The Bible doesn't really say for sure. All we can do is speculate. But pretty well, Bertrand Comperay makes the same point here. He said that it is ridiculous to go ahead and assume that Noah and his wife, both being white, could have been one white child, one Negro child, and one Chinese child. Remember in Genesis 11:25, when God created the world, its inhabitants, and made the laws governing their reproduction, he did not make an absurd chaos with whales giving birth to cattle and fish hatching out of birds' eggs. His law, several themes repeated for emphasis, is always that each creature must spring forth strictly after its own kind. And that's exactly what is said, is that every beast of the field will go ahead and, spring after its own kind. There's no such thing as flexible quasi-evolution, not even directed by Yahweh. Going on, the churches which teach this false doctrine of everybody being descended from Noah never got from the Bible, that is in any true translation of the Bible. As Moses wrote it in the Hebrew languages under divine inspiration, the Bible correctly tells us that Noah's descendants went out into a world already populated by people who had lived right through the time of the flood and were still going strong. Farrar Fenton's modern English translation gives us correctly. In Genesis 10:1 through 5, we read the descendants of Noah's son, Japheth, and it says, "From these they spread themselves over the seacoast of the country of the nations, each with their language among the Gentile tribes." Genesis 10:20 tells the descendants of Noah's son Ham, "These are the sons of Ham and their tribes and languages in the regions of the heathen." Genesis 10:31 completes it, "These are the sons of Shem, by their tribes and their languages in their countries among the heathen." Never let anybody tell you the Bible consists of the fables of primitive people. It is perfectly consistent with all true science and all true history. It is the history of our race, the Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, and Teutonic white race. And there Bertrand Comperé goes ahead and lets off. Now, folks, Comperé was the greatest scholar ever. And it is upon that fact that anybody who has come after Bertrand Comperé has either had to make his peace or not. Willie Martin made peace with the fact that Bertrand Comperé was the foremost and the best dual seed line Christian identity teacher. And as a result, Willie Martin would expand or expound upon Bertrand Comperé. Clifton Emmaheiser is essentially in rebellion against the superiority of Bertrand Comperé. And so he goes ahead and tries to spring his own little doctrines, his own little notions. In order to do that, he has enlisted the aid of Jews, be it Eli James for a while, till Eli James proved resistance, and William Fink, and Brian Rio, and the rest of these people. Folks, this is a dual seed line, Christian identity, Orthodox service. And folks, I have found out that about every single time, is that I'm not going to improve upon Bertrand Comperé. I've expounded upon it, sort of like Willie Martin did. Willie Martin died before the days of widespread bandwidth and audio files and even video files. And there doesn't need to be a video file of me looking big and fat talking to you sitting in my underwear going ahead and giving a MP3 sermon. But folks, the worldwide flood was there. And as in Noah's day, these people were miscegenating, these Adamites who had gone ahead and allowed themselves to have, quote, freedom. Freedom to essentially breed with anything. Just like we have today, to where now we no longer have a white civilization. And then we wonder, where did all these Mongols come up who are going ahead and killing and raping and looting and running wild at state fairs or in London and killing us here? And these enforcers, these pigs who are run by the Jews, are keeping us from simply preemptively saving our life and the life of our children and the life of our property by killing these worthless pieces of shit. Where did this spring up? And folks, this is nothing new. This is nothing new. This has happened before. It happened as in Noah's day. What Jesus Christ said is in Noah's day, Yahweh gave far more warning back then. He gave 120 years warning. Why? And the answer is that he wanted the white Adamites. He wasn't offering them eternal life. He was offering them salvation. He was offering them their own racial salvation. They didn't need to go ahead and build a boat. They didn't need, they could have gone ahead and cut a deal with Noah. And some of them just simply said, well, shoot, there's going to be a flood. Let me go ahead and hasten to obey Yahweh and go with cousin Daniel Boone, Daniel Ben Boone, who has already left. He was already going ahead and he's going to wind his way as best he can around Cain's or Sargon's empire. And we're going to go ahead and see our brothers and sisters that we have not seen for a couple hundred years.
and we're going to go ahead and meet with them in Europe. We're going to go ahead and arise and go. We're going to go ahead and bring technology to, or at least our technology of bronze weapons or what have you, of advanced pottery to the hunters and gatherers. But folks, in many cases, you might have had very well the same level of civilization that you did with the Adamites. Essentially, people went, just like they did today, in the rut, into the easy course. They became just like niggers and took the easy way out every single way, and that's why they became whiggers. And you had whiggers in those days who were not able to go ahead and learn, and who probably took offense to Noah saying, "Hey, look, see Grandpa over there? He's already lived 10 years longer than Noah. When he dies, there's going to be a great flood." And if you lived on the basin, on the edge of the basin, and knew that Methuselah died, you could have gone ahead and headed for high ground, because guess what? What's the purpose of that boat? The purpose of that boat is to float. What does that mean? There's going to be a lot of water coming pretty soon. And yes, it's going to come out of the sky, of all things. And yes, it's going to come as a result of an earthquake going ahead and breaking up the cap rock. And when that cap rock is gone here and it's destroyed, there's no longer any great reservoir. It's going to be like the Yucatan Peninsula, where you end up having, like with the Mayans found, ecological devastation, because there's no water to go ahead and grow the plants that are needed for a large population. So as a result of that earthquake, there was no longer the ecological foundation to support an empire of a mixed race multitude that the Adamites had become. Folks, as in Noah's day, you had the very first Zog Babylon. What Yahweh did is he did his best to destroy it absolutely, except for Adam, his three sons, and their wives. Pretty well, it was all swept away, gone, not with the wind, but with the water. And today, we are headed for the same way, but this time it will be a worldwide flood. It will be a worldwide great tribulation. This has never was and never will be before. And your job is that there is no place to flee to, except there is no Europe to flee to like there was. There's no other place to flee to save your life, and then be overwhelmed by the yellow people. If you had gone ahead and fled eastward down the Hoang Ho, just simply took a canoe down the river, which would soon be in flood stage for a long time after that as the Tarim Basin drained, there was no room. You would have saved your life, but you would have been, what would you have done among all those Chinese? Would your sons and daughters, would they have found anybody else other than Chinese to mongolize? And maybe that did happen. Maybe some of them got aboard a boat and rode, just surfed the thing down to where the Chinks lived. That's possible. But essentially they were dead. Racially, they no longer were a threat. They no longer were a Zog Babylon, which would go ahead and corrupt the rest of the world. There were just maybe scattered refugees. But Yahweh had to take care of business, and he took care of business. He destroyed the very first Zog Babylon. And as in the days of Noah, our mongrelized Zog Babylon, the third and the final, is about to go ahead and come to an end, and there is no place to flee. The only way that you as an Israelite can survive is to go ahead and beg that Yahweh, that he be his will that you and your family do survive. And that is what you should do. You should go ahead and distance yourself as much as possible from the Zog Babylon system. Insofar as possible, take your kids out of Sodom and Gomorrah school system. Go ahead, insofar as possible, grow a large garden. Go ahead and live as cheaply as you can. Go ahead and understand that life is more than just simply big screen TVs and ever new computer system and an internet and talking to idiots.
and running wild here, folks. It should be about saving your very own life. And if you do not intend to save your very own life, then you, of course, shall be destroyed by your stupidity. Do you want that? And the answer is no. You chosen seed of Israel's race, you who did hear the call, save yourself. So I'm going to go ahead and wind this up, and end it with a song, safely through another week, because the Sabbath, Saturday, is the seventh day of the week, and chances are you have made it through safely through another week. So let's go ahead and pray that you make it through another week, because no one knows when, just like Noah's day, when the return of Yahweh shall arrive like a thief in the night, and pretty well put an end to most of your idiot relatives and idiot Wigger friends and the rest of it, and you pray, not your own life, not your own family. So hail victory, folks. May Yahweh bless, and see you next week. Hail victory. Safely through another week, God has brought us on our way. Let us now a blessing seek, waiting in His courts today. Day of all the week, the best, emblem of eternal rest. Day of all the week, the best, emblem of eternal rest. While we pray for pardoning grace through the dear Redeemer's name, show direct reconciling face, take away our sin and shame. From our worldly cares set free, may we rest this day in Thee. From our worldly cares set free, may we rest this day in Thee. May Thy gospel's joyful sound conquer sinners, comfort saints. May the fruits of grace abide, bring relief for all complaints. Thus may all our Sabbaths prove, till on earth Thy kingdom come. Thus may all our Sabbaths prove, till on earth Thy kingdom come.